The History of Literature podcast is a member of the Podglomerate Network and LitHub Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Jack Wilson, coming to you in the midst of the holiday season here in America, a week or so from Thanksgiving, 6 weeks until Christmas. Halloween is come and gone, like birthdays and back-to-school weeks and everything else this year, and the pandemic and the quarantine have made them all a little more isolating. A little more isolating? A lot more isolating. Devastating loneliness has set in. Oh, I hope you are all okay. We are going to make it through, dear listeners, but for now, I am feeling the long haul of illness and the spread of disease and not being able to escape. So, one of the ways we manage as we wait for a vaccine or some kind of relief is to imagine better days in the past and better days in the future. Maybe this is why Mike and I are turning to literature and why, in particular, our minds have turned to travel. Traveling is such a huge part of my life. The feeling of being on the open road, the feeling of going from point A to point B, meeting new people, experiencing new things. And even just the daily routine of travel, the grind, the commuter train, the frequent Acela trips from D.C. to New York, all that is gone. Now I go out once a week to make sure the car battery doesn't die. And already I missed so many weeks at one stretch that the battery did die and I had to drag out the jumper cables to start it up. Which always makes me feel like kind of a guy's guy. It's one of the few car things I can do. One of those moments when the Wisconsin kid in me kicks in and I can blast electricity from one engine to another with a few sparks flashing out, but not hurting anyone or blowing up either car. That felt good. But for the most part, I have not had as many victories, except maybe for the podcast. We are doing better than ever, people. The feedback has been wonderful. I'm very glad we're there for you. We've been there for you. Speaking of loneliness, an awful lot of people have emailed me to tell me that they're using the show to help cut through the loneliness and the isolation. And to that, I can only say you are helping me to get through it as well, even though I'm just talking. I'm still alone talking. It helps to know you're listening. Okay, this sounds like a funeral. I had a good experience once at an office Christmas party. It was in a restaurant, and for some reason, the boss decided he needed to talk about the past year and his future goals for the organization, and he turned a noisy and pleasant private room in a restaurant into something silent as we all listened to him drone on about his thoughts and views, which were pompous and, frankly, kind of irritating. And while we were sitting there listening, a noisy party goer from one of the other parties in the restaurant slid open the door. It was like a wall. Slid open our partition. Maybe he was looking for his party and found the wrong place or whatever he was doing. He slid open the door and he listened for a moment and then he said, "What's this? An AA meeting?" It was beautiful. Nobody dared to say anything or to laugh, but my friend and I laughed. We caught each other's eye and couldn't stop laughing. And finally, people saw us trying to keep it together, and they started laughing. And in the end, our boss wrapped up his speech quickly and got out of there so we could all toast. And then he erupted in laughter, and he got out of there quickly. So he wasn't as humiliated as much as he might have been had he stayed up there while the cascade of laughter washed over him and his plans and his goals. So when I go through that opening statement, like I just did with all that doom and gloom about the pandemic, I imagine someone sliding open the door and saying, "What's this, Jack? An AA meeting?" No, no, it's not. We will pick things up and turn things around. Mike Palindrome is here, and that always lifts my spirits. What's this? An AA meeting? No, it is the history of literature. Okay, Okay, here we go, people. Planes and trains and automobiles. How do those three things do in literature? How do people get around in books? And which mode of transportation is the most literary? That's the subject for our podcast today. Kind of a fun one, a light one, a frothy one. Boy, getting around is such a prominent part of settings. We talk about settings in terms of place. We talk about cities. We talk about deserts. We talk about farms and oceans and basements and skyscrapers. When we talk about setting, we talk about places, houses, bars, and the characters being in those places, stuck there. But what about the way they get around? Place to place. Often that's more important to the experience and to our experience as readers. Just as transportation in real life is often more vivid and striking than being in one place ever is, what do stand-up comics talk about when they're looking for things to entertain their audience with? Sitting on the couch? Well, sometimes, I suppose, but much more often, it's about being on the plane. The endlessly fascinating experiences that happen in that self-contained little world on a plane, the things you eat and the little packages and the things that are set up for you in the bathrooms and the way the seats are and the windows and the strangeness of it all and the people you meet too, your fellow passengers, the flight attendants, the captains, the feeling you have as you are transported around. It's rich material. Well, it's rich for authors too. Is it the number one? Planes? We will see. Let's set the mood a little bit here. First with some Alfred Hitchcock. Here's an encounter on a train. Not from the movie Strangers on a Train, where two men meet and decide to kill one another's wives. And not from The Lady Vanishes, another great train movie. Or The 39 Steps, where the characters are in a wild chase. But from North by Northwest, where Cary Grant and Eva Marie Saint are getting to know one another. He's on the run. She's there to catch him, so to speak, as the two of them wind up sitting across from one another on the 20th Century Limited from New York to Chicago.
I know, I look vaguely familiar.
Yes.
You feel you've seen me somewhere before?
Mm-hmm.
Funny how I have that effect on people. It's something about my face.
It's a nice face.
You think so?
I wouldn't say it if I didn't.
Oh, you're that type.
What type?
Honest.
Not really.
Good, because honest women frighten me.
Why?
I don't know. Somehow they seem to put me at a disadvantage.
Because you're not honest with them?
Exactly.
Like that business about the 7 parking tickets?
What I mean is, the moment I meet an attractive woman, I have to start pretending I've no desire to make love to her.
What makes you think you have to conceal it?
She might find the idea objectionable.
Then again, she might not.
Think how lucky I am to have been seated here.
Well, luck had nothing to do with it.
Fate?
I tipped the steward $5 to seat you here if you should come in.
Is that a proposition?
I never discuss love on an empty stomach.
You've already eaten.
But you haven't.
Don't you think it's time we were introduced?
I'm Eve Kendall. I'm 26 and unmarried. Now you know everything.
Tell me, what do you do besides lure men to their doom on the 20th Century Limited?
I'm an industrial designer.
Jack Phillips, Western Sales Manager for Kingby Electronics.
No, you're not. You're Roger Thornhill of Madison Avenue, and you're wanted for murder on every front page in America. And don't be so modest.
Oops.
Oh, don't worry. I won't say a word.
How come?
I told you. It's a nice face.
Is that the only reason?
It's going to be a long night.
True.
And I don't particularly like the book I've started.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
Let me think. Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
And they are off. There they go. That's the fun thing about travel. You never know who you're going to meet, even if it's not quite as lively as that exchange. You never know. You might meet a new partner. You might meet a new partner in business. You might meet a long-lost friend. You might meet just someone you wouldn't otherwise have encountered. It's very literary, even though she is suggesting she's not going to be reading on the train. A lot of people do read on the train, so that's a literary thing. Here's a little tip. Next time you watch that scene in North by Northwest, watch Eva Marie Saint's lips as she's saying, I never discuss love on an empty stomach. She actually says, I never make love on an empty stomach. But that was considered too racy for the times, and they made her redub the line. You could still see her lips moving the original way, saying make love and not discuss love. Okay, let's do one more. This one is about being home for the holidays. Maybe I'm thinking about this because we're planning our Thanksgiving meal now, and it's a little sad to have it for 4 instead of 10 or 14 as we usually do. But I am in a Thanksgiving mood. It's only a week away for those of us here in the States. Okay, this one is about being home for the holidays, as Steve Martin and John Candy have concluded their marathon trip together in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. This is a great Thanksgiving movie, I have to say. It's also maybe the best John Hughes movie, and I don't say that lightly, having been formed by John Hughes movies, all those teenage movies hitting me right at the right time as a preteen and a teen. They were good, but they don't all hold up as well as this one does. Anyway, after their marathon together, the mismatched pair awkwardly say goodbye with Chicago's L in the background. Boy, do I love the Chicago L. Some good memories there, too, of that wonderful mode of transportation, the elevated train. Such a great part of Chicago. Okay, the Chicago L is in the background, separating the two of them on the platform, and here's the exchange they have.
It's been a hell of a trip.
Sure has.
But after all is said and done, you did get me home, and I really appreciate
it. Hey, next time, let's go first class, all right?
God, I hope there isn't a next time.
I know what you mean. I really do. This you?
Yeah.
It's been great meeting you, Neil. It really has. Again, I'm sorry if I caused you any trouble.
Oh, no, you didn't cause me any trouble. You got me home. And a little late. A
couple days.
But I'm a little wiser, too, so.
Me, too.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving, Neil.
Okay.
Give my love to the family, will you?
Same to you.
Maybe I'll get a chance to meet him one day.
Okay. Say hello to Marie for me. I feel like I know her.
Yeah.
So. And you have a happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, you know it.
So long.
You are all planning to be home for the holidays in spirit, if not physically. It could be worse, I suppose. We could all be in a war, separated by distance and danger, and unable even to call home. That has happened to people throughout history. So this pandemic and quarantine maybe aren't as bad as they could be, but they feel bad to me, since it's been forever since I've seen beloved family members. And I feel their absence, and the absence of everyone who's sick and suffering and grieving, and the whole country stranded in place. Hang in there, everyone, and now the door slides open and the man sticks in his head. What's this, an AA meeting? I hear you, my good man. We'll have some bon ami coming up, and I'm always a little cheered up by things like that scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I love sad scenes in movies. I love sad scenes in literature. Heartbreaking scenes, moving scenes. I like being moved, it seems, emotionally and physically. How appropriate for today. So here we go. Mike gets to pick first. We'll see if he takes planes or trains or automobiles as his number one. That's coming up. Mike Palindrome and Great Literary Modes of Transportation. After this. Hey, grown-ups. The Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. Sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Hello, everyone. This is Jack here to tell you about a way to eat better and easier. That's right, Factor, and their delicious, ready-to-eat meals. These things are amazing, chef-crafted, always fresh, never frozen. All you do is heat them up and you're ready to go. No prepping, cooking, or cleanup, and you get something healthy, nutritious, and tasty. I love Factor meals, especially on those days when I'm in the office. They're better for me than snacks or junk food, and much cheaper and faster than buying my lunch at a restaurant. You can choose options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and you can change your schedule to get as much or as little as you need every week, whatever suits you and your family best. Head to factormeals.com/literature50 and use code literature50 to get 50% off. That's code literature50 at factormeals.com/literature50 to get 50% off. Okay, joining me now is our old friend Mike Palindrome, the president of the Literature Supporters Club, who joins me for a discussion of the top 10 forms of transportation in literature. Mike, welcome back to the History of Literature.
Hey, Jack.
Okay, so I think there's a clear number one here, but things get pretty interesting when you start getting down into the bottom half of our top 10, and it's not an easy topic to research either. Did you do these off the top of your head, or did you look anything up?
I don't think there's really much to look up.
Yeah, I think... right. I started by thinking of books where the transportation really stands out, you know, where the characters mm-hmm. take some kind of ride of some sort. And then I sort of morphed into, well, which of these are the most literary? So even if I didn't have a great example of a book,
right,
I just thought when you see this form of transportation or when you take it yourself, does it strike mm-hmm. you as a literary kind of experience? So that's part of what I have here, whether it's analogous to literature or seems worthy of literature in a way, even if I only had one or two examples of an actual example being used in a book.
Yeah, I my list gets pretty thin at the end, so I may
but I did go down to number 23, and then I had a number 24 that's knocking on the door. Yeah, so I found plenty of them, but yeah, I don't have a lot of notes for some of those at the bottom. Okay, so as always, I will let you take the first pick.
Well, number one has to be trains.
Yeah, I think that's a clear number one.
I love riding trains. I love riding slow trains. Yep. I have some great train stories. So we just finished, I just finished reading Anna Karenina. So that is probably the, you know,
the train when I novel. Think
of, yeah. Vronsky sees her for the first time at the train station, and train stations generally are just a great setting in fiction.
Oh, they are. Yeah. And when I go into train stations, whether it's Grand Central or whether it's any of the train stations in Europe, you just feel like you're walking into a book. You feel like the that it feels worthy of literature, and that there's stories that are going to happen coming right out of the station, and that it's a perfect place for a meeting point, and there's something so glamorous about it, but it's so I don't know, they're still kind of embedded in the city too, you know, and it's just but then the way the tracks run through the countryside, and there's just so much about trains. I heard once that a homeowner said, when I was buying a house for the first time, this homeowner said to me, you know, of the top 10 problems you're going to have with your house, 11 of them are related to water. And, it's all about the water that's trying to get into your house in some way, or flood it, or, you know, destroy the walls from the inside, the pipes bursting or whatever. And this is kind of how I feel about it. If I were to make a top 10 of individual examples of transportation and literature, I think 11 of them would involve trains.
Yeah, and the names too, you know, Paddington train station, Paddington Bear, and King's Cross station, and the Harry Potter books. Yep. You know, the platform track. 9 3/4.
Yeah, and the Orient Express. Such a great name for a train, the Trans-Siberian Railway, the Polar Express, their kids' books, the trains are great. Thomas the Tank Engine, and I had Harry Potter here too. Kids love trains. There's something about trains that appeal to people of all ages, I think. It's great. We've got Dr. Zhivago running along the platform. Madame Bovary rode the train. It's something about the time period too, that trains were coming into prominence when the novel was coming into prominence. It was kind of at its peak in that century and into the 20th century. I think that's maybe part of it, that novels are such a great vehicle, no pun intended, for big stories and big sweeping dramas. And the train was right there as kind of the most prominent form of transportation that matched what novels were trying to do.
And I was thinking also into the modern era, the train times, like Cheever catching the same train.
Yep. I had that too. Commuter trains. Yeah.
And earlier with Proust, he catches the 1:22 from Paris to Baalbek.
Yeah. Yeah. The way that trains had started to mark the time, you see that in Thoreau, where he starts talking about that. And Nabokov loved getting on trains. And it's sort of this, the other thing that's great about it is you can meet strangers.
Yeah.
And that can be suspenseful, like in Alfred Hitchcock, he loved using trains, or it can be romantic. You know, it can be a plot device. It's the perfect literary form of transportation.
Yeah, and train riding, you know, with East of Eden riding on the top of trains, and Orwell train jumping, and so many different facets of trains and what they represent. And, I mean,
Augie March was jumping trains,
and they, you know, in graphic novels, I don't know if you've seen this movie that's based on a French graphic novel. The movie is called Snowpiercer. And every car of the train is designated for a particular class, and the upper class rides in the front.
And the train never stops. It's been going.
It's apocalypse, and the earth is frozen, and the train is the only place that's safe.
Mm.
So, yeah, trains are just great microcosms of the world.
And then you can read on trains. That's another good thing. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, it's a big, okay, so trains number one, you took it, you're gonna win the draft just from taking just from taking trains. So I'll go for my this was my number two, which is boats. And it's kind of like trains on water, I guess. That's the you know, the only time that that didn't work in reverse was when the Love Boat was so popular, and they tried to make a Love Boat version on a train, and it was a huge flop. Do you remember that?
No, really?
Yeah. For some reason, I think it was called Super Train. And the idea was it was going to be, you know, couples getting on, kind of like the Love Boat, but it didn't work. Maybe because trains move too fast. I don't know. But boats, you've got Mark Twain's Steamboat. You've got Huck Finn's Raft. You've got Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, where he's on the boat telling the story about the boat ride up the up the river, the Heart of Darkness. Yeah, that's really good. You've got the Whaling Vessel in Moby Dick. I mean, I'm feeling like this is a pretty worthy choice. Like, it's not trains, but it's up there. You've got pirate ships and...
you've got the Odyssey and
you've
the military
got the Odyssey,
invasion.
Yeah. You've got shipwrecks where you have, you know, someone's on floating wreckage or a life raft. You've got stories like Patrick O'Brien of the Napoleonic era, tall ships or ships of war. You've got ocean liners, cruises. It's got a lot of, there's something very romantic about a voyage on water. And it does feel like a very worthy literary choice.
Yeah, I mean, personally, water is terrifying. And so when you're on a boat, there's a scene in The Road where they've kind of, the father and the son have run out of food, and they see this boat rocking in off the shore, and it's hasn't fully sunk, but it's half submerged. And the father goes, I have to go out there to see if there's any food there. And there's something about a half sunk ship that just the water is kind of pouring in, and he's looking around for food, and it perfectly captures my fear of boats and water.
And even when you're on a ship, you know, you might still get the waves, you might still get the rocking. There's a feeling that you can be trapped, that you can't get away from it. If you're feeling a little seasick, you feel like you're stuck. But I love reading about it. I love reading about, you know, and there's always something great to me when I'm reading the Patrick O'Brien books about when they're in the captain's cabin and they're having their little meal, or they're, you know, they feel away from the rest of the world. And there's something kind of, enjoyable about being below deck and being somewhere safe when it's raining outside or something. It feels very cozy to me in a ship in that sense.
Yeah, the enclosed space, I think that's the best thing about trains and boats, the first two picks. And
yeah, although ships do have this advantage where you can also go out and stare at the ocean or stare at the land. You know, you can be part of nature in a way that you don't get with a train. So that, I guess, is one advantage. So I'm feeling okay, but let's move on to pick number two and see these. There's going to be a drop off here pretty fast. So,
well, I'm gonna do this because I'm afraid you're gonna take it. So I'll do cars.
Yeah. Okay. And, that is number four.
I mean, we start with just classic Americana, on the road.
Yep.
The idea that anything can happen when you climb into a car, and like the music of Chance with Paul Auster. I mean, and kind of my favorite example is Toad in Wind in the Willows. I don't know.
But
he gets into accidents all the time,
that's in a Model T.
New car.
Yeah. That's in a Model T. You know, another great car book is Lolita.
Oh, right.
Where Humbert is really celebrating the open road. Cars are great. I mean, the other thing that's good about cars for literature, you know, there was a game, John Gardner was talking about a game that writers used to play in the 70s, I think, where they would say, what kind of smoke are you? Have you heard of this game? Which it was because everybody smoked. And so it would be, you know, oh, I'm Marlboro Red or I'm Camel Light. And then you'd talk about characters in a story. What kind of smoke is the character? Meaning what kind of cigarette? You know, this character would smoke Dunhills, or this one would smoke American Spirits, or that kind of, you know, Galwazes, or, you know, whatever the character would be. Mm-hmm. You could do that with cars. You know, cars can be a sign of wealth or status, or, you know, someone can have a beat up Corolla, or, you know, it's a signifier. Someone someone could own a Tesla or someone could own a Volvo, and it kind of says something about the character in a way. But what I just love about it from a literary perspective is just that it's power and it's autonomy and it's there's teenage freedom and romance for older couples. It's a place for conversation. There's often arguing that happens in a car. And then it's got some great examples. There's a flying car in Harry Potter. There's Great Gatsby has a bright yellow 1928 Rolls-Royce Tourer car. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Christine was a very memorable car. So that's a good pick. That's I had it as number four, but I could see why you took it as your number two.
What's your number two?
Okay, so the one I had just above car was Stagecoach / Hansom Cab / Horse-Drawn Carriage or Wagon. So any kind of carriage or cab pulled by a horse. Covered wagon, I guess, would fit in here too. So in Jane Eyre, Rochester asks Jane to help him buy an appropriate one that would kind of demonstrate his status. Sherlock Holmes, I love it when he's being pulled through London in the cobblestone streets in the hansom cab. Dickens, it's great in there too. And then Madame Bovary, that's why I put it ahead of Kerouac and Lolita, is the seduction scene where she's in the carriage and they pull the curtains. And I put the carriage as number three just based on that alone.
Yeah, I love the scenes in War and Peace where they're fleeing, the Russians, the wealthy Russians are retreating from Moscow because the French have taken the city, and they're carrying all their china in their carriages, and they come across people who are wounded or the poor with carrying their children, and they some of the wealthy don't do this, but they take the china out of their carriage and allow the wounded onto the carriage.
Yeah, right. There's something, I mean, it's very close to a car, but there's something just a little, maybe it's because I'm looking back to 19th century novels, and but there's something a little more romantic about having it be a horse-drawn carriage and the wheels and the driver and then the you know, make room for the three or four people or the queen or someone is in the carriage, you know, someone's in disguise in the carriage. And okay, so we're up to your number three.
Well, I was going to go with carriage, but right, I'll have to go with airplane. And I think even more than a train, there's a real sense of chance meetings. I was thinking of Rachel Cusk's outline or the opening of Norwegian Wood. You know, it can be a chance meeting with a person, or it can be some moment of introspection where you're reading a book, because airplanes are just great for reading.
Right.
But I was hard pressed to think of one where, like, some kind of action, or
yeah,
like something disastrous happens on a plane in a novel.
Yeah, I actually had it as number 16 on my list. And I think it's just maybe I'm just tired of planes, or the airport experience has gotten less romantic over time and more just tedious. And you feel a little bit like you're being shuttled around, like you're not totally in control. There is something pretty great about a casual journey or an unexpected journey, but planes no longer really have that. It's not like you can just show up at the airport and buy a ticket anymore. And I don't know, you can't walk around the way you can on a train, and people aren't getting on and off. And I don't know, it just felt, it felt a little stifling to me, but 16 is probably a little low. Because there is something great about flying to, you know, from New York to Saudi Arabia or something, and you start in one place and you end up in this completely other place. It's kind of transformative, and that's pretty exciting.
I think I just love riding, flying in planes.
Yeah. Or maybe I viewed it as anti-literary in the sense that when you travel by land or by water, you're making the journey, it feels more human. And when you travel by plane, it feels a little bit like teleportation or something. It's just sort of a cheat code. You're not really traveling along the land. You're not really encountering the human beings who live in that land. You're just going up in the air and hovering over everything, which I could see why maybe that appeals to you more than to me, since you're, you know, sort of the highfalutin of the two of us. Okay, so I am up to my number three. You know, I was going to, actually on my list here.
I can't believe you have 16.
Yeah, well, I've got 24. I'll tick through them at the end.
Oh my God.
So let's take a break and then we'll come back with my number three. Okay, we're back. This is going to be a little bit anticlimactic, and I'm just going to say that this is part of the fantastic quality of a train. That the next one on my list is actually underground trains, so subways, metros, monorails. There's something exciting about this, where you can travel from point A to point B, where you go underground, and then you're in this tunnel, which has got this almost like a there's something dungeon-like about being underground in the New York subway or something. And then you emerge back on the street and you're in this completely different place. Again, it's kind of like teleporting. The reason why I was going to have this further down on the list, but I knocked it up a few notches because Ezra Pound has that great poem in the Station of the Metro, which is just two lines, the apparition of these faces in the crowd, petals on a wet black bough, which is one of the great short poems in English. And then there's a surprising amount of literacy on the subway that people are reading, and you can see what they're reading. And there's a lot of stories where people notice something that someone else is reading, and then they're kind of drawn to that person, and either they have an encounter or there's some mystery about that person based on what they're reading. And then there's a lot of action movies, and I tried to avoid films for this. I tried to just stick to books, but The Da Vinci Code has stuff on the subway, Metroland, Julian Barnes' book, Atonement, Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie. You know, there is something, it has a pretty good pedigree.
Yeah, I had that on my list. And also, I like the way Colson Whitehead used the idea of it in Underground Railroad by like creating a passageway, an escape route for slaves. Yeah. That it wasn't a real railroad, but you know, the idea of it as a metaphor, I think, you know, tapping on what you're saying about how it's such a great, you know, symbol, idea of like going underground and then merging somewhere else.
Yeah, right. You know? And I appreciate it so much as this way of moving around the city. I mean, you probably take it for granted, but when I was living in New York, it's just such a fantastic thing. You find yourself wishing that every city had that. I mean, DC
has it runs got 24 hours, which is the other crazy thing.
Yeah, and DC has got it, but it's not the same when you can't walk to it, when you're driving and parking or taking a bus to the station. And it's not the same as Manhattan, where you don't even really have to ask. If you're looking to rent an apartment, you don't ask, is it close to a subway? You just assume that it will be. Whereas in DC, you have to factor that in and say, oh, well, how long will it take me to get to the metro?
Wait, so how many are we doing? We're doing five each, right?
Five each, yep.
All right, so I'll leave my crazy one for number five. So for number four, I did a very, speaking of New York, a very New York form, which is taxis, which I know should be covered by cars, but
yep.
I think of them as so distinct. I'm thinking of like Catcher in the Rye when Holden is having a conversation with the cab driver about ducks and where do they go in the winter, and thinking about Martin Amis and Money taking cabs, mm-hmm. The Bright Lights, Big City. I just feel like cabs in literature, it just says so much about the era, the way the cab is described. Like in Bellow, the cab is almost like a, it feels like a Lincoln Town Car. Like you can do what you want. I think there's like some groping in Herzog in the cab. Whereas like, you know, in more recent novels, the cab is like a dirty, very pragmatic way to travel.
Yeah, it does feel pragmatic. It feels always to me like it's the city. It feels like it's money, you know, that you've got the money to take a cab, and it's the freedom of it. There's something more free than a car, where you don't have to park it. You don't have to worry about it. You just jump in and jump out where you want to be. And while you're inside, you can have these good conversations, whether it's with your driver or whether it's with a fellow passenger. But I always liked, there was something that felt almost safe to me. It was like a sanctuary from the city that, you know, I would take the train up a lot of times from DC, take the train up, get out at Penn Station, you emerge on the street, suddenly you're overwhelmed by the city, everything's hitting you all at once. And then you get in the cab and it's this little, you know, you turn off that stupid video of Liza Minnelli or somebody talking to you about welcoming you to New York and the jokes and the ads or whatever. Turn that off. And then suddenly, you know, you can just take in the city from inside this little glass, looking out the windows at the streets and everything, and you can kind of exhale and feel like your next stop is going to be at your hotel or your office where you're working or whatever.
And it's so much more amplified when you're a teenager. When I was 16, I was working at a travel agency after school, making really good money because we were inputting tickets and I'd memorized the numerical keyboard so I could input the tickets really, really quickly. And I must have spent like half my salary on cabs. I just decided one summer I was just going to cab everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. It feels kind of grown up, and it feels I do love taxis. Okay, that was number 11 on my list. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take for my fourth pick my number 6, which is The Magic Carpet, which is really I'm taking this pretty much based on 1001 Nights. Whoever sitteth on this carpet and willeth in thought to be taken up and set down upon other sight will in the twinkling of an eye be borne thither, be that place near hand or distant, many a day's journey and difficult to reach. It's throughout Persian literature that they would jump on these magic carpets, and they're also present in some Russian folk tales. I guess there aren't many other uses of magic carpets, but it's such a great, you know, you associate magic carpets with storytelling and being told stories. And it kind of made me think there's something literary about Oriental carpets in general, just the intricacy of it, the design of it. It feels substantive. And I was getting a little bit carried away thinking about it, but I thought, you know what? You know, I'll tell you the rest of my list. I don't want to step all over your last pick or anything, but when I think of what deserves a place on a list of literary forms of transportation, this one just stood out as doing better than some of the other ones on my list. Okay, so what's your last pick?
I went with cross-country skiing solely on the basis of the Magic Mountain. In particular, the snow chapter.
Right.
Where?
Oh, yeah. We've done that. We've talked about that. That's in episode 200, the famous Magic Mountain episode.
Where if trains are about chance encounters, cross-country skiing is about isolation.
And yeah, that's true.
One companion. Kind of getting lost in your memories and just clearing your mind. I think skiing is amazing in that way because there's something about being up on the slope that you just block out everything. I mean, your life can be crap, but you really don't think about anything other than executing turns. And I just think it's one of the high points of Magic Mountain when he goes out on his skis and loses track of where he is and loses track of how much time has elapsed. And it's also a lot of fun. So again, my personal take on this mode of transportation.
That's a good one, although it was not on my list. I missed it. That was not in the top 23 or my up and coming one knocking on the door. You know what? I'm not even going to take a fifth pick. I'm going to just run through the rest of my picks as being the sort of tied for 10th here.
Wait, but can I ask you if you have hiking on your list?
Well, that was going to be my next one, but it's so boring that I didn't want to take it. Walking was my number 7 from the Brontes and Kathy and Heathcliff on the Moors and Thoreau and Rousseau and the walk that Tom Jones takes from Somerset to London. And I don't know.
I had it on my list because that's my favorite John McPhee essay, Travels in Georgia, about the ecologist Carol Ruckdeschel.
Yeah.
And all the hiking she does. When she was 11, she used to hike 4 miles every day to the river.
It's one of those where it's like choosing water as a beverage. I mean, it's going to be in every book. So you could say it's the most important for literature, but and then you could find instances where people are walking and having some conversation, or they see something important, or they think something important, but just felt a little bit like a little at odds with what we're trying to do here with modes of transportation. But I did have it as number 7. I'm surprised you didn't take my number 8, which is rockets magical and spaceships.
I thought you were going to say magic horses.
Rockets and spaceships. Ultimately, yeah. I didn't take it because even though I know they're prominent in science fiction, I sort of associated them more with movies, so they didn't quite make my list. Number 9, I had horses. 10, I had dog sleds, which was mainly from Call of the Wild. But also, I think the dog sled is a really literary form of getting around. It's a little difficult, a little romantic, a little exciting. 11, I had taxis. 12, I had hot air balloons, mainly from Around the World in 80 Days. But again, there's something, you know, kind of grand and beautiful about the hot air balloon.
There's that opening scene of Ian McEwan's Children in Love.
Right.
It's great. And that the boy, well, I don't know if people have read it, but I don't want to give it away what happens. But as it unfolds, it goes from being this spectacle that anyone would look at to this horror.
Yeah, right.
Because it's so slow moving. I think it's just such a great opening. Yeah.
I had the experience once where I was on the golf course and I was like lining up a shot and all of a sudden I heard a guy say like, oh, looks good or something. And he was so close to me. It almost knocked me over that I thought there was this person who was standing right behind me, and it was a hot air balloon was traveling over.
Wow.
And he was so low to the ground, you know, but it was so quiet. I didn't even know that it was almost upon me. Okay, number 13, I had rickshaws because of my love for those when I was traveling through Asia. 14, I had bicycles, which some people might have higher, but I put that almost like walking. It was a little dull. 15, I had buses, which I thought of Flannery O'Connor and just the way that humanity can get mixed together in a bus. And there's school buses in children's literature, like from the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Baisley Frankenweiler, was very memorable. But other than the strange bedfellows aspects of it, I kind of resent buses more than I appreciate buses. And so I knocked it down a few pegs. 16, I had planes. 17 was submarines. 18, I guess I had taxis in here twice. So I guess I should take that out. 19, I had teleporting. 20, I had camels. 21, mules/donkeys. 22, skateboards. And 23, scooters. And then the up and coming one I had was ride shares, which I think is going to be, I mean, Uber and Lyft and that kind of thing. I think that's going to end up being very high on the list going forward, because I think a lot of people are coming to use that kind of like taxis, or it's going to have a kind of romanticism to it of just jumping in an Uber, and it will spread in a way to other cities and locations that taxis don't service. I mean, Manhattan is a perfect place for taxis, but Uber is much more useful in cities outside of New York.
You didn't have Elon Musk's single pneumatic tube?
The Hyperloop? No. And, you know, I heard recently, I was all excited about that, like everybody else, like, oh, wow, you could travel, you know, what was it? It was like L.A. to New York in 45 minutes or something. It was like he was building some test tracks and stuff. I actually heard recently, just a few days ago, that was part of a plan he had to kill high-speed rail that was going through. It was about to be passed. And he then declared, you know, this thing which he had sort of famously written on a back of an envelope or a napkin or something, and announced that he was about to start testing it and everything. And it apparently helped defeat whatever measure they were about to pass to enable an actual high-speed train. And then it wasn't for a couple of years that he sort of acknowledged that the Hyperloop idea is completely not feasible and it's probably not going to happen. And meanwhile, he got enough people to vote against the high-speed rail. There were a bunch of people who were against it anyway. And then he got a couple of stragglers apparently who were like, well, why don't we just wait for the Hyperloop? And they voted against it. And so LA to San Francisco didn't get the actual train they could have had. And trains is number one. So all those Californians were deprived their chance to ride in the most literary form of transportation available. Okay, well, let's leave things there. Mike, as always, thanks for joining me on the History of Literature.
Thanks, Jack.
Okay, there we go. That's going to do it for this episode of the History of Literature. My thanks to Mike Palindrome for stopping by. I hope you enjoyed going on this journey with us, or those multiple journeys, as we all dream our way back to a more mobile world. And in the meantime, we can read about them, those clattering wheels and clip-clopping horses' hooves, those helicopter blades chopping the sky, those zooming jet engines turning us into Icarus, or Icari, or of course those piping steam whistles and the beautiful chug-chugging of the locomotive engine and the heart-lifting rattle of 19th century iron wheels against iron. The glorious train, may she run on her tracks forever, from her station to her destination. We are a part of the Podglomerate Network, www.thepodglomerate.com, and Lit Hub Radio. You can find us at facebook.com/historyofliterature and historyofliterature.com. If you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/literature. I'm Jack Wilson. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
the Podglomerate, a Sonic Universe.